Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. And I had talked earlier in the program about a college football coach can't complain about his work schedule, because the immediate, I mean, the pushback, the shot back, even from fans, like his own fan base, is the money. You hush. I'm not going to talk about how tough life is for somebody making $4.5 million, $11 million a year. So they can't talk about that. And I said, but I will. And it was about the calendar and about all that is already on the plate, and that no matter what your income level is, it still is possible that your work life has derailed every other aspect that isn't part of your work life. All right? When we're talking college football head coaches, for some, it's change your family tree sort of money. It's also a requirement to overwork to an unreasonable degree. And so everybody who, I'm assuming, you know, married, everybody has a spouse and chillens and outside interest, even Nick Saban and he gardens, you know, 2 days a year. So everybody has something, and if you're only doing it 2 days a year, it's because you're doing way too much work. I had an interview with, I didn't have an interview with Comcast. I was employed by Comcast. While employed by Comcast, we recorded an interview with, at that point, UCF head coach George O'Leary. And I was like, we're going to Orlando? I was in Atlanta at the time. And they said, oh, no, we're going to his lake house. And it was at Lake Oconee. And so we all get in the CSS van or whatever and head out to George O'Leary's log cabin. It's a log cabin. It's about 9,000-square-foot log cabin. On the water, dock. Big boat. I walked in. I was like, dang, because I knew him from back when he was at Georgia Tech. And I walked in. I was like, God almighty. Oh, whoo, look at this. He's like, quote, I was here 11 nights last year. That's his primary residence. Or at least that's where he's like, that's where the mail comes. He says, anything that's important, this is the, he's like 11 nights. So, and by the way, it was a great 11 nights. I'm certain it was 11 nights. And, well, what about now? And George O'Leary, does he work, Dan? Does Coach O'Leary, I don't know if Coach O'Leary works. But if you get to be age 70 and you're not working now, then good for you. And you've got that house. Good for you. It was 50 years of work to get there. Nick Saban, whenever he stops working. So, again, I understand the whole backdrop of this. It is possible to work to an unreasonable degree that every non-work facet of your life just is not even a factor. Now, the reason I'm talking about that is because of all the brand new challenges, including early signing period in December and the transfer portal. Now, the transfer portal, it takes time, even with college tape, which is way more, you can find that stuff way more in the high school tape. Even with that, you still have to evaluate kids. And it's a spot, let's say it takes you spend 4 or 5 hours on a kid that you decide to offer a scholarship to through the portal. You don't know if he's going to take it or not. and you don't know if you're going to offer him or not. But you have to take time. Let's say it's 4 or 5 hours, but it's reliable. It should be, you think. Before the portal, you didn't have to do any work to replace that scholarship because you weren't replacing the scholarship, most likely, unless grade, you kicked him out, you did something, he left, whatever. But you know what I'm saying. The portal, multiply that times like 38. So you weren't having to, in many, many cases, you weren't having to do any work, much less, it's just 4 hours. You weren't having to do any of it. So that is because I am the head coach, wide receiver, GA, offensive analyst at Tulane. And do you know what I do? I only look at transfer receivers. And so I'm trying to find transfer receiver. I'm the wide receiver coach at Tulane, let's say. And I only look at I'm looking for receivers, and I'm trying to find them. And so I see a wide receiver at Kent, and I see a receiver at Minnesota, and I see a receiver at Virginia. I see one at Southern Cal who is not happy. All right, well, that's all well and good. Maybe we'll – so I evaluate them plus a bunch more, but these are the five. Let's offer these five. And a bunch of high school kids. Now, that's a lot more of a dice roll. We'll see how that turns out. Do you know what I hadn't talked about that is honestly – this is – I didn't even mention to this point, if there's anybody who's listening thinking, well, wow, that is a lot of work. Maybe I'm convinced that 1% Chuck's right on this. Or but not that I'm right. That's the wrong phrasing. That maybe there is a little bit more than I haven't considered. You know the worst part? I haven't listed the biggest challenge to a coach's existence now. He has to recruit his own roster. The unending, ceaseless re-recruitment and re-recruitment on a daily basis to keep that kid happy. There was a linebacker at Florida State who 2 years ago, before we were bringing Ingram Smith on, and I was asking him, I want a pronunciation. And he was like, make sure you get that right. I don't want him in the portal. The kids have done it for less. Folks, that's where we are. I talked about yesterday. Do you know what used to happen on a lot of recruiting visits? Hey, I'm going to camp or I'm going to a recruiting visit. Do you know what used to happen? Here's some cleats. Here's a T-shirt, pair of shorts. Let's go run. Huh? Yeah, we're going to work you. Why? Because this is Tennessee. And at Tennessee, you want to play football at Tennessee? Well, I'm a five-star. Mm-hmm. And it's so late in the process. And we're going to true love you today. Believe me, we're going to true love you. But we're Tennessee. And so that doesn't happen that way anymore. Not nearly as much. Rodney Garner, who he has a wide-ranging resume and has been part of a lot of success on the field in college football, man, in the SEC specifically, obviously. He talked about the phrase decruitment. And there was a five-star defensive lineman who showed up at Auburn, and he said, well, now we've had to decruit him a little bit. And it was Montrevious Adams, who's in the NFL, really good player. And whatever the weight was, it was how big the biggest lineman? He's like 225 pounds or something. He's like, mm-hmm. Well, you're in the SEC now. Nobody's 225 pounds on the offensive line. So he said we had to decruit kids. You know what you're not doing as much now? I promise you, I will bet you $100 million. Dan, get me access to $100 million. I'll bet you $100 million that Rodney Garner does not speak to recruits today the way he did when Montrevious Adams showed up as an 18-year-old. It would have the best thing possible was before he got to his first practice, somebody intercepted and said, Montrevious, walk with me. Let me explain what's about to happen. Jimbo Fisher? Oh, he just hired Bobby Petrino. Do you know what I've always, my opinion has been, and I have not been dissuaded from this, ain't nobody touching quarterbacks on the roster where Jimbo's the head coach. That's his position. Jimbo coaches that differently now. We marveled about Kellen Mond and his ability to withstand that verbal assault. And Jimbo, he just wants the position played correctly, and I understand the critical nature of that. And that's the way he went about it. And he had a lot of success. And he, like, Christian Ponder. I'm going to say the name again. I'm going to pause. Christian Ponder was a first-round draft pick. All right. Think about why, how? In large part because he's smart and he works hard and all that other stuff about Christian Ponder. And then it was Jimbo Fisher. E.J. Manuel. I mean, you look at some of the guys and you're like, what? Oh, Jimbo. And then all of that stuff ended. Jimbo doesn't coach it the same. He can't. He can't. And now I'm juxtaposing, I'm guessing that second part, just because he was always cited by others as an example of the first way. Rawr, bark, bark, bark. That is not what it is. And so having to re-recruit your own roster, that's the worst part. Now, do you know the traditional part that, like, maybe, Marcus Freeman is likely to be dealing with? We talked in hour one. It's pretty close to happening, or it could happen today, or maybe it's happening as I'm speaking these words, that Notre Dame's offensive coordinator, Tommy Reese, can go to Alabama. That means Notre Dame's going to need a new offensive coordinator. That could be Joe Brady. When I say a guy with a surprisingly thin college football resume could be back in the game, I'm talking about, like, I don't know, tonight. Joe Brady. Do you know what Joe Brady's college football resume is? As an adult, as somebody who is no longer on scholarship. Joe Brady, the entirety of Joe Brady's college football resume. 2 years, linebackers coach, William & Mary. 2 seasons, GA at Penn State. 1 season, LSU, where he was not the offensive coordinator. He was the passing game coordinator and the wide receivers coach, and he won the Broyles Award, which doesn't always go to just an assistant. It's usually a coordinator. So, Joe Brady, that's it. I ran through it. 2 seasons at William & Mary. 2 at Penn State where he's a GA. He ain't just getting a stipend. Not really getting paid. Mostly. And then the season at LSU, which was the end of the rainbow. He may be back in the game as Notre Dame's offensive coordinator. I would like that. I've heard that he hated recruiting and didn't want anything to do with it. And he turned, put his track shoes on, and ran to the NFL as quickly as possible. And that was a giant thud. I don't, because of him, because they didn't have a quarterback, whatever. It's the NFL. It's not easy. But if he's back in college, Marcus Freeman would love to discuss with him. We're going to break. Come back on this Friday next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Get my attention, like, really? Get my attention with a college football headline or announcement or development or something. 2 days after signing day, and it ain't got nothing to do with a high school kid or transfer. Get my attention. That's not nothing, man. Everybody looking around at college football last year, Devin Achane, my goodness gracious, what an generational kid. And I don't think I'm overstating that. He just was so talented. Gone. Anaya Smith. I'm gonna try not to overstate this. I liked that kid as a. I can do a lot with him. I can do a lot with him. I liked him so much going into last season and a grown man and all this. And dang, his final season, just a few games, like 3 or 4 games, and he's out. Well, it's not his final season. And he never really declared for the NFL draft. He just, everybody looked and was like, well, he's old, so he'll leave. And he's like, well, you know what? I can't be a super senior, and by golly, I'm going to be one. Folks, this is a big, big offensive weapon, like at the SEC level. Want to welcome on right now today's Truist reporter, AggieYell.com. That's Rivals. It is Mark Passwaters. Brother, how you doing today?
Hey, what's going on, Chuck?
My team's got to play A&M, and I'm like, ooh, this is nice. Anaya Smith, he is a – I'm going to say, like, from a fan standpoint, I'm like, wow, he's fun to watch. You tell me about his skill set and what the blue sky can be if he is healthy and he's looking around going, hey, there's not a lot of other proven receivers in College Station. Like, could this be a big, big season for him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at it. Bobby Petrino is now the offensive coordinator. You know that Petrino likes to throw the ball around the joint if he can, but he always likes to have one primary receiver that gets the – I wouldn't say the bulk of the receptions, but, you know, there's definitely a guy that they look to first. And why would it not be Anaya Smith? You're talking about a guy who was averaging 19 yards a catch last year before he was hurt. He's experienced, extremely elusive, got good top-end speed, not great. But you got to – when he gets the ball in the open field, you got to be able to tackle him. And that's the tough thing with him. Great punt returner. And not only that, he's a stabilizing force. He's a leader in the locker room. And with a young team, that's what you're looking for. I mean, outside of the fact that he's only like 5'10", 5'11", he checks all the boxes. And to have him back with Evan Stewart and with Moose Muhammad and Donovan Green at tight end, you know, Bobby Petrino's got to be sitting there going, ooh, I like what I got here.
You mentioned Bobby or Bob Petrino. Coach Petrino, I don't even – I'm supposed to ask you anytime a coordinator's, what's the division? Is he really going to call plays? I'm like, Bobby Petrino's not going there to let anybody else call plays. That's my opinion. You agree with that?
I think that one of the things that is good about this hire is the fact that Jimbo is saving himself from himself. Because you're right. He could go over there and say, give me the play sheet. And Petrino's going to look at him and say, take a hike to the other side of the field. You know, that's one difference with an experienced coach like Petrino as opposed to a younger coordinator that in that route they could have gone. So I think that, yeah, I mean, he wouldn't be there if he wasn't calling the plays. He wouldn't be there if they weren't going to change the offense. So, yeah, I think that Jimbo may not like it, but that's what's going to happen. He's going to be hands-off. He's going to have to be the CEO coach. And, you know, let's see where the chips fall.
Give me some Connor Wegman talk because I've heard people say, well, you saw what Bob did with Lamar Jackson. I'm like, oh, I'm all ears. So go ahead. Tell me about Bob Petrino coaching Connor Wegman.
I think that it's going to be real interesting because Wegman is a better athlete than people realize. I mean, when I saw him in high school, there were, you know, some hints that he looked a little bit like a fellow named Manziel. Not quite as elusive, but he can get out of the pocket. He can make plays with his feet. And then he was real judicious with the football last year. You know, 8 touchdowns, no picks. Pretty good for a true freshman. So I think there's a lot of things he can do with him. I don't think he's going to be, you know, the centerpiece of the running game like Lamar was because he doesn't have to be. You know, when you have Amari Daniels and Le'Veon Moss and Reuben Owens, who was the number one running back in the country, according to Rivals, you know, you don't need your quarterback to run that much. But when the opportunity presents itself, he can certainly sit there and put a play in the book and say, okay, go get yourself some yardage.
All right, so I want to ask you, who fills the shoes of Devin Achane? Probably not anybody. Can Anaya Smith be back to being a little bit of a slash? Is it going to be a combination of guys? But Devin Achane was a next-level generational sort of guy.
Yeah, I don't think that it's going to be Anaya. I think you'll see him some in the backfield simply because of what he can do when he catches the ball, and it gives me a little bit more optionality. But I think it'll be the trio of Daniels, Moss, and Owens. I think if you're looking for a guy that can be RB1 and take the carries away from everybody else, eventually it will be Owens. But I really like Daniels. He has proven that he can do things with the football. And shoot, he averaged 6 yards a carry when he got a chance last year.
Mark Passwaters, appreciate your time as always, brother. Thank you.
No problem, Chuck. Take care.
Texas A&M, Rivals.com. It is Mark Passwater. So we always ask that. Like, who can replace? And, again, it was Percy Harvin and Kadarius Toney and way back. Who's going to replace David Palmer? And it just move on. And the program, and then somebody shows up. And, like, Urban Meyer at Florida for all – just who's going to replace Devon Achane? Well, nobody. Somebody's going to be on the field for – like, count the number of snaps that Devon Achane was on the field. Well, somebody will have those snaps. They'll play with 11. Count the yards or the catches or the attempts or the whatever. Somebody will try. They'll get spread around some. Urban Meyer, of all people. When Tim Tebow left, he won his Heisman as a sophomore, I believe. And 5, 6, yeah. And a national, he had two national championships as a player. And a Heisman. And then he left. Because his time was up, and he was a first-round pick of the Broncos. So Tim Tebow's off to the NFL. Urban Meyer said, now that Tim is gone and Florida fans will love him forever, there'll never be another player like him. Do you know who was, like, in the background and, like, four people over? Cam Newton. Or there'll never be another player in a Florida jersey. And I'm like, you had one on the roster with him. With him, you had one. So you never know. Then it was Percy, and it's whoever. So it can be anybody. But with Devon Achane, he was already a great-looking slash sort of kid. And then it turned into he was an SEC game wrecker, and what he did against LSU. There were some Saturday and Saturday nights where in a season where there was no consistent passing game and that nothing happening downfield. And as the game went on, and I mean by, you know, middle of the second quarter, it was like Canadian League football. Like, are there 12 out there? And he still would have just against talented defenses. Still have fantastic games. And so, now who's going to do that? I would like to see Anaya Smith a little bit back in that role because that's what he did back in 21 some. But it is a different situation, and maybe he's needed a little bit more because he mentioned Moose Muhammad and Evan Stewart and they tight end or two they like. But Anaya Smith could be one of the biggest, I think, most versatile two-way guys in the entire conference.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
When you got a question about Alabama football, ain't nowhere better to go. My man in Huntsville, and everybody in Huntsville knows that, 97.7 ESPN, it is Drew DeArmond. Amigo, how are you on this Friday?
How are you doing, Chuck?
Oh, I'm blessed. How about Nick Saban? Is he going to have some new coordinators?
Well, I mean, I think he's zeroed in on the offensive guy.
Reese?
You know, yes, sir. From all we hear from since yesterday about lunchtime, Tommy Reese and that his name started becoming prominent in the search. We know he Zoomed with Nick Saban earlier this week, and then he flew with his fiance to from South Bend to Tuscaloosa yesterday, had dinner with the rest of the coaching staff. It's supposed to meet with Nick Saban today, and we strongly believe if everything continues to go, well, that he's going to depart Notre Dame. Had a chance to talk to Pete Sampson, who I know you know very well, on the show this morning, and he's leaning heavily to that as well, and that it's going to be a big hire for Marcus Freeman. But I think Tommy Reese is a really good fit, especially with what all we've been hearing since the middle of the season that Nick Saban's kind of wanted to go back to the future offensively and get back to physicality in the run game, and I think Tommy Rees has done that. He's only 30 years old, but as you've followed Nick Saban his entire career, Chuck, he's never been afraid to hire a young up-and-coming coach, and most of the time it's been a big-time hit for him, starting with Will Muschamp years and years ago when he hired him from Valdosta State.
I'll even go a step further. I've always thought this was kind of interesting. Nick Saban has zero qualms about hiring an assistant who irritates him, like somebody who he knows is going to cause a headache or two. I like guys who make him a little uncomfortable. He's like, no, we can. And I've always noticed it. But so a guy like who Tommy Rees wants to come, absolutely bring him on in, man, and maybe push the offense to a new way. Tell me what you think that offense may look like.
Well, I think it'll be more pro style. I think it'll be more run based. I think it'll be a lot like what you saw from the second half of the Ole Miss game forward, formula-wise. Alabama, you know, when you're talking about balance and play calling, it was more 45 runs, 30, 35 passes. They didn't put the entire game on Bryce Young, even though Bryce, I thought, was the best quarterback in college football. This group of offensive personnel didn't have the game breakers at wide receiver. The running back room, the offensive line, as it improved under Eric Wolford, it gave Bryce Young a better shot. Plus, as we all know, Bryce had a very high-profile injury in the Arkansas game. So for the rest of the season, he wasn't 100%. So any kind of balance you could achieve was, the best thing for this Alabama football team. I think when you go into next year, Chuck, and you look at, Jace McClellan coming back, Roydell Williams, Jamarian Miller, and then the two hammers they got coming in, the freshman, Justice Haynes, who, from what I understand, put on a show in the 10 practices for bowl prep, and then Richard Young coming in June, you're going to have a very deep running back room. And if we know, I think the thing that impressed me most about Notre Dame during the Brian Kelly tenure is how they ran the ball and developed running backs, and I think they want to get back to that if Tommy Rees is indeed the OC QB coach.
All right, you got to bet your pension from 97.7 The Zone. Charlie Strong, Jeff Collins, Jeremy Pruitt, Todd Grantham. Who's the DC?
Well, I mean, I would have a week ago, even 2 weeks ago, I would have bet Jeremy Pruitt. But I think that there's just too many issues to work through with what's going on at Tennessee. There's been no decision there. There's been no show cause that has gone public. There isn't one right now, but there's still a lot of red tape that has to be gone through. Nick Saban has been poring over that with lawyers, with the NCAA, with everything. I don't see Jeremy Pruitt on the field for Alabama. I'm like everyone else. I have heard all the buzz involving Todd Grantham. He certainly goes back a long time with Nick Saban, back in their days together with George Pervis at Michigan State, and then even with the Cleveland Browns. He has a lot of experience as a DC. I would like to hear maybe a Jim Leonard come into play. I know when Jeremy Pruitt left in 2017, he was of high interest to Nick Saban, but he was working his way up the ladder at Wisconsin, didn't want to leave his alma mater. I've heard he could potentially take a year off. Maybe if an opening happened at Notre Dame, if Al Golden left, he could be in the mix there. But I've also heard his name a couple of weeks ago mentioned for Alabama. I know he was open to the idea from what I heard. But, again, haven't heard anything in several days. So it's going to be interesting. I think the whole thing has been in a holding pattern because of Jeremy Pruitt. Right now, I think the safe bet would be a Todd Grantham, but I don't think it's far from a certainty. I think Nick Saban's taking his time, been working through the Pruitt situation. I think now he has a definitive hold on that, so we'll see. Maybe even a guy like Kevin Steele could become a name to watch again because he was at Miami last year. He is with Mario Cristobal, but he and Nick Saban go back a long ways. So it's going to be interesting. But certainly we didn't have any clue about Ryan Grubb and Tommy Rees until that info broke this week. So Nick Saban, I'll say this, Chuck, he's had staff changes every year in Tuscaloosa, and this cycle of hires has been the hardest to track. He's been very, very interesting in how he's kept a lot of things in-house, and you haven't been able to kind of get a feel for what he wants to do.
All right, well, let's talk on-field, hopefully. Your opinion after spring practice. I don't ask anybody who knows Alabama football this. After spring, like a week or two after spring practice, what's the quarterback three deep look like?
Well, I think it's going to be Ty Simpson. Certainly, I don't think it'll be decided. I know they would like to keep Jalen Milroe in the competition into fall camp, but we know it's hard to keep quarterbacks on your roster. It's the most transient position in all of college football, no doubt. But I would say Ty Simpson, and then I would say Jalen Milroe, and then Eli Holstein. I know he's impressed them with his arm talent. Now he's got a ways to go. He had some injuries in high school. He's been a little banged up. So he's going to – but he did enroll early, and so did Dylan Lonergan, who's also listed on the baseball roster for Alabama. I think he's more along the Mac Jones developmental path, which means a few seasons in Tuscaloosa. But I would say if you ask me, a week after spring practice, the feel would be Ty Simpson, certainly Jalen Milroe, still battling it out, but I'd say 1A, 1B, and then Eli Holstein would be number three.
So much we could talk about with the transfer portal, and a lot of people do, and we'll do that as well. But, we didn't talk nearly as much high school recruiting, really, even in December. Alabama in-state did great work. They lost one giant kid out of Montgomery, or Alabaster, but they lost just one giant five-star. But they got a lot of the kids they wanted in state. And for Alabama, it is a state, it is a year to year thing as far as four stars, five stars in state at Alabama. This year was a great year for in state recruiting. I think Nick Saban, they flexed a little bit in Tuscaloosa, didn't they?
No doubt, especially down the stretch. I mean, Tony Mitchell's recruitment, he was also from Alabaster, the teammate of Peter Woods. His recruitment was a roller coaster. He committed to Alabama, as you know, early Chuck, but he flirted heavily with Auburn and with Texas A&M. I know Auburn thought they had a lot of momentum heading into that December 21st signing date, but Nick Saban made sure to keep him committed. He's a guy that could end up being a safety. He could be a nickel. And certainly the guys you're commenting about from Montgomery, James Smith and Quay Rousseau, they were huge because Auburn certainly had them targeted. As linchpins of Hugh Freeze's first class, and of course Kirby Smart at Georgia, they were heavily in the mix for them. But James Smith, many people believe he's the top prospect in the state, along with Peter Woods. He's at a need position because Alabama needed to fortify their defensive line due to some losses like DJ Dale, Byron Young, and then of course Justin Aboigbe. Looks like he'll be back, but there was some uncertainty with his health situation. They needed to restock on the D line. James Smith was a key guy. Quay Rousseau, his teammate, what they've lost at outside linebacker and Will Anderson. They had to fortify and get that young man because he's versatile. He can play inside or out. Alabama certainly lost both starters, Jalen Moody and Henry Toa at inside backer. So those were two five stars they had to have. And so they did lose Kelby Collins to Florida. They did lose Peter Woods. Woods was the biggest loss probably. But other than that, they controlled the state. And it was probably the most talented in-state class since that epic one of 2008, which kind of set Nick Saban up for this dynastic run in Tuscaloosa, led by the future Hall of Famer Julio Jones.
I'm going to ask you about one kid who, there may have been like a three-win team last year, and there'll be a three-win team this year, and they got a corner who's 6'2". I don't know. If Nick Saban and Bama get a corner who's Jahil Hurley? From Florence, I assume you've eyeballed him in person. He's 6'2 and about 175, and boy, tall with long arms. That's a great place to start with corner, isn't it?
Yeah, he definitely has the length. He's a legit 6'2. Almost looks like he's 6'3 when you're watching him, Chuck. He's definitely it reminds you of when I had a chance to watch Dre Kirkpatrick at Gadsden City many years ago. We know what kind of career he had. And now I'm getting so old that Dre Patrick Jr., Kirkpatrick Jr., will be a prospect next year. So that just shows you how many the years fly by. But Jahil Hurley certainly was a standout on both sides of the ball, but his future's on defense. He's a guy that could play either corner or safety. I think he has the hip flexibility to do so. Probably needs some emotional maturity, but so do a lot of these kids when they get to the college level. But he has all the physical attributes you look for. He has the uncommon size and length, and I think he's got a bright future at Alabama if he listens to Nick Saban. He certainly can go on and have a great career. Dre went on to be a three-year stalwart at Alabama. He was part of that 2011 defense. It's one of the best in college football history, and then played a decade in the NFL. And now, as we said, has a son that's going to be an SEC prospect following in his footsteps at Gadsden City High School in his own right. So, again, Jaleel Hurley, another one of the linchpins of that class. But it was a great secondary group overall, and you could argue that Alabama signed the top secondary class led by Caleb Downs and Jaleel Hurley in the country.
Wrapping up, Drew DeArmond. Follow him on Twitter, DrewD977ESPN. And that's where you can get him every Monday through Friday morning. So there is a concept. I want to ask you about it. Like Todd Monken is the latest. Ever so often, you just hear very clear conversation about an assistant, a coordinator who is, you know, I'll paraphrase, he's allowed to just stand over there with his play sheet and he didn't have to recruit. Todd Monken is who we're saying that about now. Is that a most favored position at Alabama with Nick Saban? Has that been the case of, look, if you'll come be my DC, OC, whatever, you don't have to recruit, just with your play sheet, you do what you do. Or does everybody have to toe the line recruiting?
Well, I think if you want to say if there's a position that's close to that at Alabama, it's offensive coordinator. When you saw Steve Sarkisian, you saw Lane Kiffin, you've seen Bill O'Brien, their main responsibility is the quarterback position, Chuck. And they certainly have hit on those guys. You saw what Lane Kiffin helped lay the groundwork for, and Sark with Tua Tagovailoa and Mac Jones, certainly who were great players at Alabama. One of the last things Sark did before leaving Tuscaloosa was lay the groundwork for the flip of Bryce Young from USC to Alabama, had a chance to coach him as a freshman. And now they have Julian Sayin in the house. And I think a lot of that groundwork was laid by Bill O'Brien in his 2 years in Tuscaloosa. But Julian also saw Sark and Lane and what they did as he was growing up and coming up and developing as a football player. Alabama not afraid to go to the West Coast and recruit, just like Georgia, not afraid to bring guys across the country. They've, just like Georgia's done with the best tight end in the country. When you look at Brock Bowers, he's from California. Nick Saban and that staff have done a great job with Tua Tagovailoa from Hawaii, with Bryce Young from California, Julian Sayin, now a five-star that's coming across the country, looks like, for Alabama. And the cool part is Tommy Rees is a Californian. He's recruited nationally for Notre Dame, so his ability to evaluate and develop quarterbacks has been good. He's done it at Notre Dame. He's recruited that position very well. I know Notre Dame was very excited about their future. He also got Sam Hartman out of the transfer portal, so yep. I think he'll fit right in as a recruiter and developer of quarterbacks, should he later today potentially be named the OC and quarterback coach at Alabama.
All right, one more question, and maybe it's like, no, Chuck, I hadn't. I don't know. But I don't talk recruiting on this show until we get to, like, December of next year. Perry Thompson, you mentioned Julio, and he's coming out of, you know, the panhandle down there, Foley. There's a kid, Perry Thompson, who's maybe the number one kid in the state. He's 6'3", 200-plus-pound wide receiver from Foley, and he's committed to Alabama. All right, that got my attention, but I don't know anything about him beyond that. Have you seen him in person? Do you anticipate you will?
I anticipate I will. I've only watched film. He is he has an outstanding frame. He's tall with outstanding leaping ability. He does remind you a little bit of Julio Jones. Of course, I've never really seen another Julio, a guy that came out of, so physically developed out of Foley High School many years ago in 2007, was the number one receiver arguably in the country. And we knew from the first practice what kind of impact he was going to have. And of course, Julio also had an uncommon approach mentally and a great work ethic and toughness that was instilled in him when he got there. But Perry, you know, Thompson, that Foley program has been down since the great Todd Watson was coaching him. He's now ironically on the staff at Alabama, but I think he has a chance to be a special receiver. There's no doubt that Foley program had their best season in years this past season, as Perry, you know, put up great numbers. But don't forget another name. He's, of course, a little bit younger. He's only going to be a junior, but he was Mr. Football, the first sophomore, Ryan Williams, whose father played at Auburn, but he's committed to Alabama right now. He will invoke the name David Palmer, who many people still believe pound for pound was the greatest high school player to ever come out of this state. But with Perry Uno Thompson and Ryan Williams committed right now, the future looks pretty bright at wide receiver for the University of Alabama in the 24 and 25 classes.
Drew, I took too much of your time. I just enjoy talking to you, so I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
Drew DeArmond, 97.7 ESPN. We break. We wrap up next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I think every college football coach in America would tell you they're frustrated. We're living in a fluid dynamic, right? You know, we essentially, there's a lot of good things about NIL, but I think the combination of the NIL and the portal creates a dynamic. You got all the bad things about the NFL, but none of the good things.
We talked a little bit about that. Chuck Oliver Show, wrapping up on Friday. That's Billy Napier. Things are worse than NFL free agency. That is one thing we discussed, that, like, I predicted Kenny Golladay. Do you know Kenny Golladay? He was a receiver for the Detroit Lions. And his first few seasons, he was catching passes from Matt Stafford, which Lions never won anything with Stafford. Wasn't Stafford's fault. A lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns, a lot of bad team around him, but he kept pitching. And so Golladay signs a giant free agent contract, like, I don't know, 4-year deal with the Giants. Do you know what didn't happen? He didn't show up in East Rutherford, see Daniel Jones play quarterback, and then like 3 weeks later, I'm going to go play for Denver now. That is what is happening, not what can happen or what has happened a few times, and here are the anecdotal stories. That's what happens, like, on the reg in college football right now. He says it's worse than free agent. Yeah, it is, because at least when you sign a free agent, well, you kind of got to stay. Not in college football. It's tough, man. Like I said, I am not here to say, oh, poor coaches. Roster whack-a-mole, including your own players. Oh, by the way, try to retain your assistant coaches. No matter what the salary is, you still can have a requirement that you have no life in any other area, and that sucks. Dan, how are you?
Well, it's also, too, I mean, I think if nothing else, you have to put some sort of guardrails on this thing, right? I mean, you know, I've heard you say it. I've heard other people say it. When you were out once, I did this as a topic where I said, stop saying it's free agency. It's worse than free agency because at least in the NFL right now in particular, you can't talk to free agents. Like, of course – that as soon as the, you know, clock hits 000 next week in Arizona, that's when, quote unquote, people become free agents, but you're not going to be able to talk to them until March or April. So if that's the case in the NFL, why can't it be the case in college as well? Because we hear it all the time, and that's why it just makes me chuckle whenever coaches still say student athletes. I'm like, especially in football, stop saying that. It's just not true because you have guys who are clearly there for one intended purpose, that is to play football. Going to school is just a necessary evil to them that they have to do. Let's just call it for some guys what it is. Some guys do take it for what it's supposed to be.
Oh, you major in pre-NFL, pre-med, pre-law, pre-NFL.
No, and that's exactly it. But it's just also as well.
That's fine, by the way. That is a fine answer.
But if you want to live up to that, then at least have the intention of saying the one-time transfer, we're here for this thing. But the way that it is right now, where basically at any given moment, a kid can just say, yeah, I don't like it here. As a matter of fact, I'm going into the transfer portal and I'm stepping away. And then immediately the recruitment has to happen. I understand that the window is closed right now, but don't tell me that these guys are still not talking to players that are in the transfer portal. And just by happenstance, you're going to tell me on May the 1st, all of a sudden, hey, you just entered the transfer portal, but now you're at UNLV. You get my point here is that we have to have at least something here of saying, hey, look, if you're going to be there, at least be there for the year. Later on, when the year has come to an end, we can come to a discussion about if indeed you want to move on and go somewhere else. But really, just right now, this kind of just opening it up with the one-time transfer, which, again, I am for. And now we're also having it where the JT Daniels and other players of the world can exist, where they've been to 3 or 4 different schools. Soon enough, you have to ask yourself, what are we doing here?
The grad transfer eligibility provision, that's there independent of if you've even transferred at all. So if you've transferred, and I get my one free. And then you're like, well, it's just 2 years later, and he's like, oh, he has his degree. You can if you're motivated. I did not take this path. You can if you're motivated and you got, you know, brain cells. You can graduate from college like the end of that third summer. And I'm a grad, so I can transfer, and it's fall, and I can play right now because I'm a grad transfer. That's JT Daniels. I did not take that path. David, tremendous week. Thank you, brother. Dan, same thing. We break for 2 days. Back Monday. More of the Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.